Hey, Ashley, it's Sylvie. Sylvie from Lipoelastic. Hey!
Hey, girls. I'm so excited to chat. I found out that I have lipoedema a year ago thanks to my work with Lipoelastic, and I've been doing everything I can to manage my symptoms. The biggest difference for me, though, is wearing my compression-active leggings pretty much every day. Every time I don't wear them, it feels like I'm missing something. I absolutely love them.
Well, we love Lipoelastic, too. It is definitely our go-to compression.
That's great. Don't forget to share your discount code LipiMamas with your listeners.
To keep swelling down and your fashion sense high, check out lipoelasticshop.com and use the code LipiMamas for 10% off. Ever wished you could be in a room with pioneers of the lipedema community? Doctors, researchers, therapists, and patient advocates?
Well, such a chance is available to you, and soon. The annual Fat Disorders Resource Society conference is happening March 21st through the 23rd in Atlanta, Georgia, and there are tickets to be there in person or virtually.
This is a conference where professionals and patients alike get to rub elbows and learn from one another.
The Lipedema Mamas will be there too, recording exciting live episodes. Come see us. Information to join is in the show notes.
Welcome to Lipedema Mamas Podcast. I'm Sean Digby, and this is my co-host, Ashley Fisher.
This is a space where we talk all things lipedema, connecting you with resources, education, and inspiring personal stories.
From these Lipedema Mamas to you, we hope to bring you the support you need on your own journey with lipedema.
All right, let's get into the show. Welcome back to the Lipedema Mamas Podcast. Today, we have a super duper special guest that we are so excited about. We have with us Anna O'Brien. She is Glitter and Lasers on Instagram. She has a platform that reaches somewhere around a cool 12 million people, so no big deal. She is the confidence queen. And if you have not just absolutely doused yourself in her content, what are you doing? Because it is, you seriously, Anna, are one of the brightest, most wonderful spots on the interwebs. And we are so excited to have you here with us today.
Can you please just follow me around and hype me up everywhere? Because I like need more of that in my life.
Absolutely. You just tell me when and where and I will be there and I'll have a boombox and everything.
I'll get you pom-poms. I will kit you out.
I'll do it. Listen.
Until you just said glitters and lasers, this whole time I've thought your page was called Glitters and Glazers.
Yes.
And I was thinking, like, what is a glazer?
I know.
And now it makes a lot more sense hearing you read it like that. Where'd your name come from, though?
So funny story. I was in Austin for South by Southwest and I was a big nerd. And I was walking down the street with my friend Elliot, who, man, I haven't talked to him in forever, but I'd had a few. Let's be real here. I'd had a couple drinks. And Elliot turned to me and goes, what would be like the best party if like guys and girls took the best thing from a guys and girls party and threw a party, what it would be? And I go, Glitter and Lasers. And I said, I'm going to buy that domain right now. Drunk me in my like 20s, bought this domain.
That's amazing. And
because I was a tech nerd, I also went and got all the social.
See, that's fantastic. That's awesome. And that's honestly, awesome. I have done the same thing. I don't know what it is with my eyeballs. Every time Sean and I have talked, we've been like, hey, we need to reach out to Glitter Glazers. So I went and I trained my eyeballs and I was like, Glitter and Lasers, Glitter and Lasers, Glitter.
It's fine. I don't know what a glazer is. Sounds like a donut. I like a good donut.
Oh, there
fine.
You go. That sounds good. My thought. That's good. So, Anna, you are, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are a stage 4 lipedema patient.
Yes.
Who has
stage
been.
Stage 4.
Yeah. And you've been going through a series of surgeries with Dr. Amron's office, the Roxbury Institute, Advanced Lipedema Treatment Team. And I want to get to all of that, but I just want to know. Because again, whenever I found your page before you started your surgery journey, it was fairly short. It was like, I found you. And then the next week you were like talking about consults. I was like, whoa, look at that. But I found your page and I was like, oh my gosh, this woman is just, I want to be her friend. That's why I messaged you and pestered you. Because you're... just, you have such a brightness about you, such a joy. You are the confidence queen. And we can talk about that because I know that what we put out there and versus how we feel sometimes are probably two different things. But I want to know what happened. Like, why did you even start Glitter and Lasers? And why did you start these platforms?
So this is the probably most unusual influencer start story you will ever hear. When I first had glitter and lasers, like when I first started it, it was literally for my friends. And I don't know if you guys remember the era of where everybody had a blog. Mm-hmm. Everybody and your brother had a blog. Like, we all thought that people cared about the mundane details of our life. We all had a blog spot. And we all would
Did you have a Zanga?
Oh, hell yeah, I had a Zanga. I just migrated through whatever was the platform du jour. And I was trying to lose weight at the time, which I've talked about before. And I didn't necessarily know about lipedema, but it was that. Then I just let it be my, like, friend page. It was back before people used their real names on social media. We all had, like, cool code names. So that was my code name. And fast forward maybe, like, a couple years, 3 or 4 years, I'm working in a tech company, and we made software for social media. And they were like, we need you to test this. I was a product manager. So, like, literally my background is coding. I have a master's in statistics. That's what I was doing there. And we were testing, like, analytics and, like, programming for content. And we needed an account to test that. So I was like, oh, I'll just throw my personal account in here and then I'll post every day. And that way, like, I can see it. And my friends will be, like, doing me a solid and like it, because that's what friends did back in the time.
Yep.
And it blew up.
Wow. What was it? Like, did you have a specific post or reel that just absolutely went nuts?
I will say on TikTok, I did have one, like, piece of content that really blew me up initially. I was in Cuba and I was just walking in Cuba, which is, like, a weird thing. And I think I am a larger body that a lot of people have not seen being active. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really shocked and presented something that a lot of people hadn't seen at that time. I think it's a little bit more common now in social media. But at that time, like, a lot of people in my size bodies did not show themselves.
Yeah.
And they specifically did not show themselves, like, living a cool life. So here I was, a plus size person in this country that a lot of people are maybe afraid to go to, doing things that people dream about. And so I think I became inadvertently this inspiration to live beyond your size. And I think that has been a challenging part of my journey, because yes, I absolutely want to inspire people to live their best lives. But I also have a lot of guilt and frustration with myself during that time, because I didn't look at my weight and go, something's not right. Because I was, like, really deep in that body positive movement and just really the perceptive of, this is just my body size. And right, come to find out, I kept getting bigger and it didn't make any sense. And obviously my body wasn't happy at that size or happy in that way, or something wasn't right because it wasn't staying consistent. Mm-hmm. And the most frustrating thing about this, I think, in being online and being so present and having so many people see me, is, like, the things I was doing and have always done were always questioned, right? It was like, oh, she's just walking 5 steps for camera and then sitting down, which, if you've ever met me, I'm not a sit downer ever. Yeah. I do too much. And it's something I've actually had to relearn in part of my recovery. But so it's weird, because I would dare say that I was more confident and had a better relationship with food before social media than I do after, because I never really thought about what anybody else thought about those things in that period of time.
Yeah. I listened to your podcast, the Medical Detectives podcast, which is really interesting, by the way. We can talk a little bit more about that later. But I heard you talk about that part of your journey and how you felt, like, this guilt and the dichotomy of being out there saying, accept your body, love your body, and then realizing, wait, something might be wrong with my body and maybe I do need to, like, tell this to everyone. And I think that's really interesting. And I want to talk a little bit more about that. But before we do, I'm just curious, before you started this social media journey and this online presence, childhood, Anna, did you always just have this, like, inherent self-confidence? And was this just always your personality?
It's tough. I've always had a weird way of seeing the world. And I don't know if that is from being slightly neurodivergent, or because I was, like, had to be really independent as a child, that I always had the perspective when people were mean to me that I was like, man, why can't they see how awesome I am?
That makes me sound so mean. No,
That's awesome.
Anna, okay, just food for thought. This is so random. You're sharing in a, this is a podcast of neurodivergence here. Yeah. So we're going to be like, what? But I'm chasing a squirrel. You need to write a children's book for that kid. Just anyway, keep going.
But yeah, I think that was the bigger challenge for me is I almost began to think my own self-viewpoint was flawed because I was often fed contradictory perspectives on that. And throughout my life, I've done some pretty amazing things. And I think because I've always sought knowledge and exploration over attractiveness, I've had a lot to ground my self-worth on that isn't related to how I look or my size.
I love that.
I know a lot of people in this community struggled with weight from a very early age, started on the Weight Watchers and all the crazy diets, like at 10 or whatever. And then especially if you have this disproportion and your body's not responding the way your friends' bodies are, did you ever feel like something's wrong with me? I'm just different.
Oh, 100%. Like, I feel like I don't think anyone can say they went through childhood not hating themselves at some point. I think the challenge with being in a bigger body is like, I was already awkward, right? I was socially weird. I also grew up in a really religious family, so that made me super cool. I wanted to tell you about Jesus. Listen. And guess what? People don't want to hear about Jesus in middle school.
They don't. But we tried, didn't we?
We did try. Did not help us. Let's put it that way. If you paint a picture of me when I was younger, I was a larger kid. I hate saying overweight because I don't think there is a set weight. So underweight, overweight, I guess those are medical terms, but I just feel like it's a very villainizing term to throw on someone.
Yeah.
And also, like, I was a big kid. So I hit puberty really early. There's a photo of me with all my cousins. I am 6 and a half. My cousins are 12 and 13. I am the same, like, size as them.
Wow.
So, like, I was my full height in fifth grade.
How tall
are
you?
I'm 5'10", 10 and a half.
Okay. Oh, tall girls unite.
So imagine being that height in, like, fifth grade.
Yeah.
This was like, I lived that life.
Yeah, so I was just big. I was just big all around. So, like, also then being heavier and, like, awkward. Everybody tried to get me to play volleyball all the time. Did that happen to you, too?
Oh, I was like, I made every sports team. I've said this before on the podcast, like from the earliest of ages, the coaches saw me coming. They were like, yeah, like you're in. And then I started playing and they're like, oh,
you're out. No,
you're out.
In basketball, I was only good because I was like literally a wall. Like there would be like a child like half my size. And I'm just like, oh, and they'd be like literally afraid of me because I looked like the Hulk to a small child. But even though we were the same age.
See, these traumas are what make us funny, though.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. I'm hilarious because my life is so jacked.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely struggled and had self-worth issues. I think that is true. But there was, it was like from a different perspective. And I think that it wasn't ever, I'm going to, I hate to say this, unalive myself or I'm not worthy. It was more that was like, how can I help people see that I have worth? Because I know I have worth, but I don't understand why nobody else understands I have worth.
Wow. Yeah.
And I think that's a really hard, it's just as painful, but it's a different type of pain because you then start to think, am I wrong? Am I wrong in thinking that I have worth? And so I think that was my challenge. And again, people are like, that's so much easier. It's not. Again, it's just that brain working slightly differently, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So taking that into your adulthood and then really stumbling into this creative space with Instagram and this platform, what does your platform mean to you now? What's the intent behind it? What has it grown into?
Yeah, so I would say it definitely has evolved. I think there was this initial time in my life where I was like, money in the pocket. And there were some really good times. Let me be real. But no, I have stepped away from that perspective. And for me, it's what can I do good in the world? One of the things I'm like really cognizant of and I really try not to do, sometimes my personal perspective slip through because I have obviously all of us have had medical journeys and they shape how we see different treatments and different things. But I really try to rely on this messaging that nobody can tell you more about your body than you already know living in it. And treatment should start with a medical professional. And that finding that medical professional is really important. So on the medical side, that's a lot of where my messaging is. I am not going to tell you to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to tell you to investigate it with your doctor.
Yep.
Because I've had a lot of things I've done or tried to do in my life that have affected my body negatively because I put Joe Schmo, who is a trainer on the internet, told me that this was a good idea.
Yeah.
And I just don't think that culture needs any more help. They really hate me and they do a lot to talk negatively about me because they want to sell you something and I don't really want to or need to sell you something other than hopefully the desire to go be healthy in whatever that way that looks like for you.
Yeah.
The second thing I really focus on is just finding joy in your everyday life. I think we spend a lot of time trying to aspire for lives that are not real. And having lived in the Instagram world and the social media world, I have seen firsthand how manufactured people's lives are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I am not cool. And people are like, oh, yeah, but you are cool. And I'm like, no, I am not cool with a purpose because most people are not cool.
Yeah.
Most people are just trying to get through the day the best way they can and feel good about it.
Yeah.
Most people are not going to crazy concerts and events all the time. Most people aren't buying designer purses every week.
Yeah.
And that is not a realistic lifestyle to attain for.
Yeah.
I work with Starbucks. I love working with Starbucks because it's real. It's a place I get coffee all the time. You know what I mean? It is a part of my life, so it makes sense. And so I've really focused more on working with partners and things like that that are real parts of my life versus aspirationally shooting for things that just don't really equal me, right?
Yeah, they don't reflect like who you actually
are. And I think the only exception to that is when I feel like there needs to be someone in the room that looks like me and there's not. So sometimes I go to events that feel uncomfortable for me solely because I might be the only bigger person in that room. So sometimes I just show up because people need to see people like me living, doing cool things.
They do. It's so important. And that's why your content is so inspiring. I love it. I just love it. It's weird to say, I just love to see your body, but I do. But it's true. It's because you don't see it. I feel like you said you are seeing it more and more different shapes and sizes of bodies on the internet. But for so long, that was a big issue for me growing up is that, of course, we didn't really have social media. I don't know, maybe MySpace when I was a teenager. But like on TV or in movies or in magazines, I did not see my body represented ever.
And if you were there, it was like someone trying to lose weight.
Yeah.
Like the character story arc was losing weight.
Yep.
Which I think it's challenging. And I would even say within the plus size creator space, just in general, since I live so heavily in that space, there's a lot of pressure to always be seen beautiful. Mm-hmm. So like always have your makeup and hair done. And I have made a conscious effort to show myself in what would be considered ugly phases. So show myself when my face is in a flare, to show myself without makeup, to show myself with acne, to show myself when I look terrible. Because 50% of the time, that is how I look.
Mm-hmm.
We have this perspective that everybody's put together all the time. And the reality is we're not.
Yeah.
And then you post to Instagram and it's so easy and so tempting to just want to do a little like, ding, let me put that little Paris filter on that just kind of smooths out my complexion and all this stuff. But I think, like you said, it is. It's so important to show the real.
Yeah.
And be unfiltered. Yeah.
But I do also show, like, I'm just be very real. Sometimes I will do like a fantasy makeup and I will do filters and stuff because that to me is just creating art.
It's fun.
And that is another side of myself. But I don't think those things have to live in contrast to each other because I feel like I show enough of myself as the Hot Mess Express that you can appreciate the times when I go and create something artistic. And I think that. Yeah. If anything, what social media needs more of is like multifaceted people.
Yes, yes.
We live in this like one vein of what a person looks like. And then we lose sight of the fact that people are ugly and beautiful. People are talented and also terrible at things. Mm-hmm. People are messy and they're clean.
Yes.
We are all of these states of being at various times of our journey, our day, our week. And to really show a person, you do have to show all of those parts of your life. And so that's really what I'm trying to be. And I get hate no matter what I do. So who cares?
You know what? Yeah. And I think, too, if ever the intent is to put things out of authenticity on the internet, if it's ever for to hopefully please somebody, that's just a losing battle, because we're never going to be able to please everyone. Everyone is always going to have an opinion. I can only imagine the type of junk that you have to deal with. And hopefully, though, you get the what we're telling you. I think that the fact that you put on display the tension that is like our personhood, it is today I have my makeup on, but just 2 hours ago, I was covering up this spot under my nose because my skin wants to act like a teenager today.
Right now, here, girl. I got one too. That's her sister.
But showing that tension is, I think that is more than likely probably what's drawn people to you, whether they know it or not. Because for you, it's you're displaying that, just all of these different tensions, and also living in a bigger body and doing that authentically. But for somebody else stumbling on your page, it might be, hey, I don't ever show the part of me that like really loves to read. And also my comprehension isn't all that great. And so I struggle, and just being honestly real. So thank you for just being authentic, because we need more of that.
I feel like you've done the same thing with your surgery journey, where it's been very transparent. There's a lot of reels and content of you like actually laying on the operating table. So it's pretty transparent. But this is all fairly new, right? When did you discover that you had lipedema?
So here's the funny story. And this is wild. So I have these social media accounts about 7 years ago. And this woman emails me who works, I think, at one of the lipedema research organizations. And she goes, I work for this organization. You have lipedema. You are like the characteristic archetype. And even like, through my journey, my body type is like the characteristic archetype. I have a lot of weight in certain areas. I have no weight on my hands. People always are like, why are your fingers so thin? It's because I have lipedema. So she's, you have lipedema. And I remember calling my friend up and being like, this witch is sending me an email trying to diagnose me with a medical condition. She doesn't know me, blah, blah, blah. And it's wild because I still think it's like inappropriate to diagnose someone over the internet, but also she was right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it did take a while of me, A, knowing that, and then B, struggling with some things. I did what I think a lot of people do, which is like the, okay, I guess I have it without a diagnosis, which I honestly don't recommend, because I think there is a lot of healing and a lot of acceptance and a lot of courage that you get from having a real diagnosis. And I think one of the biggest problems personally plaguing the community is that people don't get diagnoses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they become experts on what's said in a Facebook group versus experts on their own body. And to really manage this illness, you need to become an expert in your own body.
Yep.
And honestly, doing the medical detectives has taught me that's true for any chronic illness. Like, diagnoses are like life-changing, but also they are not uniform. They are not consistent. And just because you have the same diagnosis does not mean that your bodies will react the exact same way to every stimuli. So until you start that journey with a doctor, it's really hard to get to the root of what's actually causing you to live the way you're living and how you manage it best. I am mad at myself for living in that little bit of that self-diagnosis space for a while. But eventually, I ended up working with an obesity research doctor in Houston. And so I was driving 3 hours, pretty much a week at one point, to see her there and back. So 6 hours a day. Sometimes I'd stay overnight. And we started to work on, I was like, I need to understand why I'm big. I think part of it is lipedema, but this doesn't make sense. So she did a bunch of research. I had met with a primary care physician previously, and we had found I had a lot of different deficiencies and issues, some autoimmune things came up during that process as well. And so I had treated all of that. Now I was looking at managing my weight. So we put me on a GLP-1 just to see how it did, right? And instantly I just started moving more. And I felt like I got part of my old self back because I had slowly stopped moving over maybe the course of 7 or 8 years to where I was doing much less than I used to do. And that old part of me came back and I was like, that's weird. It must be because I've lost weight, because that's what you get. That's the story you get told. When you lose weight, magically life becomes easier and better. And maybe that's not necessarily untrue, but that's what I chalked all of it up to. And then it just stopped. And we tried to change my medication to see if we could like up it. I ended up having a weird allergic reaction to it, to the new medication. And so we went back and we're like, nothing's moving. We tried combinations of meds. We tried new treatments. The doctor I was working with was, again, at a research facility. So she had access to things that necessarily might not be available generally to the public at this point or haven't been used yet widely. And at some point she said, you know, I know you have lipedema. We've discussed it before. I don't know how to treat that. I know how to diagnose it. I know how to recognize the texture in the skin, but I don't know how to treat it. So let's find you a doctor. I found my doctor via PubMed. So we saw a couple different doctors. All of them were doctors who had published or written in the academic space. And that is how I found who I eventually ended up going with. And when I saw Dr. Amron during the consult, it just became very clear that my body was so fibrotic that my issues could not be fixed by diet. And I think this is a really, the fascinating thing that doesn't get talked about enough in our community. And I think it predominantly only affects later stage patients, which I think it's maybe why it doesn't get talked about a lot. But when your lymphatic system is like completely shut down from lipedema, it also affects your veins. So your veins start to rise to the top of your skin. That's why a lot of people with lipedema have like varicose veins. In my case, most of my lower level veins were completely contracted and most of my blood was moving through a series of veins just at the surface of my skin. I was also starting to pool plasma in various spots where the veins had broken. And so I had parts that I thought were like fat rolls, which were actually pools of plasma.
Really?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So there was just really bad circulation. There was really bad flow and movement of pretty much anything in my body because those veins, those things that move the lymphatic system were all just so much pressure on them that they could barely move what they needed to move. And this affected a lot of like blood-related things, blood pressure, all of this. So when it got down to it, a lot of discussion was had and it was like surgery needs to happen now. And the hope is that we clear the system and then things can start moving properly and maybe you will lose weight. I don't get my hopes up about that. That is not something I'm focused on because it is a very much we don't know what will happen.
Yeah.
But there have been a lot of people in the later stages that I have heard from multiple doctors that I'm working with, not just Dr. Amron, but also my doctor in Houston, that have been able to clear all the pathways and all of a sudden their body has normal trajectories to move things around and weight loss does start to happen. So it's one of those things where it's, I can't focus on that because again, everybody is unique and everybody responds to treatments and experiences differently. But it definitely wasn't going to happen. And it definitely wasn't going to change unless I took care of it.
Yeah.
And that on top of all of the pain that I was experiencing that the GLP-1 was really masking. And that's what we learned. I painfully learned going off of it for surgery, made it like I really didn't have another option.
Hey, Ashley.
Hey, Sean.
I got to tell you about my newest current obsession.
All right.
It's my pneumatic compression device from Eros Medical.
Ooh, okay, tell me more.
Eros Medical is a leading provider of pneumatic compression devices and garments that treat lymphatic and venous disorders.
All right, what was it like?
So the one that I got is part of their new truncal garment line, and it provides compression therapy in the legs and also helps treat pelvic and abdominal swelling.
Is it just for lipedema patients?
No, so it's actually for lipedema or lymphedema patients.
That sounds like something I want to look more into.
You do, because I'll tell you that after using it for just about an hour, I noticed significantly less swelling. And I've also heard from many other women that they really notice a decrease in pain.
Okay, so if you're interested like I am for more information about Eros Medical, its product line, and the conditions that they treat, visit www.aerosmedical.com/lipedema mamas.
You won't regret it.
Hey, y'all, it's Ashley. I am so excited to talk about something that has been such a huge help to me as I was recovering from my surgeries this last year. One of my biggest fears going into surgery was having to wear compression 24/7 for a while. I had heard horror stories of how uncomfortable compression can be. Enter my post-op best friend, Mirena Compression, and let me tell you, they made my recovery so much easier. Mirena has been the go-to brand for medical-grade compression garments for over 30 years. We all know that when it comes to compression, not all fabrics are created equal. Mirena's proprietary Tri-Flex fabric is like no other. It provides you with the right amount of compression and support while remaining comfortable enough to wear all day and night. The best part? The fabric contains antimicrobial protection to fight odor-causing bacteria and cooling and wicking so you can feel confident and comfortable all day long. And did I mention, they are not hard to put on at all. I keep my Mirena compression at the ready when I'm heading into a day that I know could cause some swelling, and Mirena keeps me comfortable, hemmed in, and so much less swollen every single time. Mirena really cares about this community, and they have partnered with us to offer you guys a special discount when you use the code LipedemaMamas20. That's Lipedema, M-A-M-A-S, 20. Choosing the right compression for you is another super personal part of this journey with Lipedema. Visit their website, Mirena.com, and see if these wonderful garments are your long-awaited perfect fit.
And I think some people are like, surgery is bad, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, when you're at a dire end state where the option is you are leaking blood in your body, you're leaking plasma, your lymphatic system is functionally not working pretty much at all. You're having swollen lymph nodes. Those have risks of getting infected. There's all kinds of like crazy stuff that can start going on. When your option is live life like a vegetable or get these surgeries that are hard and the lymphedema may come back, but at least everything will be moving in your body again.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, because this is where so many people, I think they stop on their thinking about getting lipedema removal surgery because, and I was this way. I remember with my consult with Dr. Amron, if there is any chance that this is coming back, I am not putting myself through this. But that's not the point. The point is to rid your body of as much of this diseased and fibrous tissue so that it can begin to work in a proper way and so that you can intervene. Like, that's the point where if you get as much of this out as you possibly can, and now knowing, you know, what you didn't know, what took 32 years of my life to build up, I got the bulk of that removed, and now I'm doing everything I can with as much knowledge as I have to keep any progression at bay. That's the point. And I think, because I think a lot of people, I think the two biggest things that stop people from heading down that road is, of course, finances, which I can get riled up about.
And I can get very angry about the healthcare system. Yes. Everything is stupid expensive and nothing's
crazy.
Covered.
No, it's ridiculous. But then secondly, it's just this thought of, if it's going to come back, why would I do this? And because the hope is that you can, after these surgeries, intervene to the point where you don't get back to the point where you were prior to surgery, that kind of a thing. So anyway.
Yeah. And I think it's really hard because I don't think, like, I've also heard, just candidly talking here off the cuff, I've heard people say, I got one or two surgeries and then I decided to stop. One of the things I've learned very clearly, I'm very in tune with my body and I can feel my lymphatic system move crazy. It's like wild. Mine also makes noises. It's very weird. Have you ever heard your lymphatic system gurgle? It is the weirdest thing ever. Like, mine makes noises. It's my MLD team loves me because I'm like, my body like very much responds to MLD and very much like you can feel things moving. It's very weird.
Like in your stomach or like in your limbs? Like when I get MLD, I can hear like my stomach will be like making noises, but.
I've had it in my arm. I've had it in my leg.
Wow.
I've had them push a fluid and I can feel it move up and then tingle in the back left of my brain.
Whoa.
Yeah. It's like super responsive. Like I can super feel my lymphatic system, but I can literally, I know where things are connected based on where they feel. So I said, she was working on my right leg one day and I was like, oh, that's got to go to my left side. And she's like, what do you mean? I was like, I can feel it in the left side of my, in my left side of my body.
Wow.
And she's like, it does connect to your left side.
That's and wild. Like,
so anyway, what I've seen because I can feel it is that as my surgeries have gone on, the fluid is getting trapped in different places. Mm-hmm. Right now, the last surgery I have is my stomach and it's getting trapped there. Like sometimes during MLD, my fluid will actually go up to my arm because it can't go out the stomach unless they manually do it. So we have to do MLD on the stomach multiple times during it because I'm so compressed in the stomach area that it can't be sucked up properly. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This is a fascinating conversation that really we haven't had before, other than Ashley and I talking about myself and my own journey, because I've talked about this with my doctor, but I have had my arms and my lower legs done, but then life happened and I had to stop. And so I haven't had my upper legs done, and my lower legs have just been so swollen for the longest time, longer than most people would say that they experience swelling. And Ashley and I will be like, what is it? What's the deal? And we had this theory that it's trapped. It's getting trapped by my thighs. Like it's not moving.
Yeah.
Not a doctor, but I would say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Based and my on doctor my own confirmed he thought that might be the issue too. But yes.
And I feel like too, because the one big hot topic in Facebook groups, which I try to stay away from because they're scary.
To be really honest, I don't find them helpful. And I feel like there's a lot of people who police each other, and I don't think that's healthy.
I agree.
For this illness. I don't think it's good.
Yeah, I'm so glad she said it, and I agree. A big topic that comes up is this idea that, oh, I had lipedema removal surgery, and now my lipedema has moved to another part of my body, because a lot of people notice like a bloat or a swelling in their midsection, which. So I think that what we're talking about here might feed into this a little bit, or it might help explain. I feel like that people often see fluid collect in their abdomen because when they get MLD, they're just treating like their legs. Or a lot of people have the leg pumps that only pump their legs and don't pump their abdomen. And so where is all that fluid going to go? But their abdomen. And then if you haven't had
your abdomen. Or go up to your armpits if you have an abdomen.
Yes. Yeah.
So here's the thing I will say. I'm going to be spicy here for a second. I would say 50 to maybe even 75% of MLD practitioners are shitty.
Are just
absolutely terrible. I am absolutely obsessed with my MLD team, but they are pros to finding a good MLD. In my experience as someone who's worked in oncology, if you find someone who has experience in the cancer background, usually will be much more informed about the body. And what I've noticed is when I've gotten someone I really feel good about, and I've had MLD in multiple states and multiple places, and I've seen really good and one that was absolutely terrifyingly bad, where someone tried to pitch me a business while giving me MLD, and that was wild. Okay, anyway, what I've come to see is a really good practitioner can feel and tell where your liquid accumulation is and will adjust their MLD to that.
Yes.
So I think it's a skill and it's an art and it's an unappreciated art. Most of these people do it because they love it and they love seeing the difference. But I have never gone to an MLD and not with someone I really trust and think is great and not had them work a bunch of areas that had nothing to do with where I was currently struggling. And every single time they're like, we have to clear a path for that to have somewhere to go. So if all of these other areas are full, you have nowhere for that liquid to move to.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, a huge problem in the space is just bad MLD.
Yeah.
And I had MLD before my surgeries, and I thought my person was great, and they were not.
Yeah.
They were doing cosmetic MLD, which is not, which is, even if someone's trained in the right methods, like it doesn't, it's beyond
and
that.
It's hard because you hear like how beneficial MLD is. And then I think so many women are frustrated because they're like, I don't notice anything. Are they doing it right? I went to someone who the first MLD that I had after my surgeries, first I had it in Spain by a team that was amazing, so good, so in tune. And so thankfully I did, because then when I came home, I knew what I was looking for. But it's hard to find someone that's really thoroughly trained. So I found this business online that was called Lymphatic Drainage, Lymphatic Therapy. And I was like, well, this business name is Lymphatic Therapy. Obviously, they know how to do lymphatic drainage. And that's what she like advertised. That's what she advertised, was that her specialty was like lymphatic drainage. And I didn't know what to look for, like credentials or whatever. So I went in and had this very bizarre, like hot stone, very hard, like pushing. And I was thinking to myself, like, this feels great, but this is not lymphatic. And this is not MLD. But I wouldn't have known had I not been to someone who did it properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd also say, like, one of the things that's really interesting about lipedema MLD is, especially as you get to the advanced stages, there is different techniques. So as the body becomes more fibrous, we start by opening my whole body. And then we do use harder techniques to physically move the liquid out.
Yeah.
Because I have trapped pathways, some of that force has to literally push it through. And that's where I hear like the gurgling in the movement. Mm. But
yeah,
we would never start with that. Does that make sense? It's opening everything up. But I do, it's hard because I am grateful to the Facebook communities for finding commonalities in the conditions and helping people better understand the relationship between lipedema and things like HEDS and other chronic illnesses that I don't think would have been discovered if people weren't talking to each other. Yeah. At the same time, I feel like there is a lot of, for lack of a better word, gamification of lipedema care, where people think that I am a better person because I manage my lipedema better than you. And I have had people message me and be like, you're eating the wrong foods. You wouldn't have gotten to stage four if you had done X, Y, and Z according to me. And here's the interesting thing that I think never gets talked about. Conservative treatments will help manage lipedema, but it will not stop the progression of it. It will reduce the swelling and the effect on your body, but it's not going to eliminate the progression of the disease. It might slow it, which is totally fair. But also, how can you expect someone to perfectly manage a condition that is nuanced, under-researched, under-discussed? People are not educated about it who are diagnosing it. So like, you're just going to blame the patient here for not doing everything that you think they should be doing, when we don't even know necessarily if all those things are what this particular patient should be doing.
Yeah.
And this is where the like going to the doctor and seeing how your system works versus someone else's is really important. But we've prioritized these communities where people are sharing information for free. And that's part of the problem, is that getting diagnosed and getting treatment is expensive and Facebook is free.
Yeah. Yeah.
It creates this weird dynamic where I don't believe that our validity of the illness can progress until it gets more medical attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally agree. And I think our like doctors right now that we are talking to, even the ones that are what we would dub the experts in the field, they did not learn about this in school. And hopefully that is something that's changing. There is a group from Lehigh University, a group of like honors students who chose lipedema as their honors project. And their goal is to get lipedema going in universities. I think sometimes we forget, to your point, that we are really on the cusp of this becoming a well-known thing. So much of the awareness has been brought by patients themselves and people talking. Mm-hmm. But goodness, we're still waiting on freaking insurance companies to realize that this is not cosmetic. It may have a cosmetic effect, but that's not the number one goal here. It's functionality, it's quality of life, it's life-saving in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And we're still, I sometimes just wish we would all collectively give ourselves like a pat on the back, because we are trying.
It's exhausting.
It is. It's exhausting, not only managing it, but also trying to get people to wake up and realize like it's a thing and it deserves attention just any other ailment does.
I'm going to say something really spicy. I'm going to be really spicy. It's a spicy episode.
We love the spicy.
Okay. So I posted something yesterday where I was like, weight loss surgery is not a treatment for lipedema. And I had a very angry response to that with someone saying, it can help you get towards surgery, blah, 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 blah. And I am flabbergasted that people are not aware of the fact that many doctors promote weight loss surgery because it will be approved by insurance. Not because it's the proper treatment, not because it will help you manage your illness, but because insurance will cover it.
Yeah.
It's also more expensive to execute than lipedema removal in terms of follow-up and care and everything else. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part about that is if you are a later stage patient, someone like my size, and you have all those constricted veins and you have all those constricted problems, it is going to exacerbate the problem.
Yeah.
Because it is not going to solve the fact that those systems are not working. So now you're asking your body to recover from a major surgery without repairing the systems it needs to recover.
Yes. And those weight loss surgeries can do an absolute horrendous number on your ability to intake proper nutrition. And if our bodies cannot take in the proper amount of nutrition, we are only setting ourselves back. And I say that with a lot of grace because I know that there are people in those scenarios where it's like either one or the other, I've got to do something. And so I want to remain completely empathetic to that. And I don't want anybody to feel any shame if they've had a weight loss surgery.
Yeah, no, like,
I get it. But
I just think it's doctors who don't care enough about the patient to fight for the solution that would actually benefit them most. And I'm not saying that there's a combination of lipedema surgery and weight loss surgery that would benefit people. My thought is like, you need to get the body working correctly before it can handle something like that.
Yeah.
And also, and trying to go do it the opposite way, which some people do. There's a lot of horror stories where people end up in the hospital because they can't get proper hydration or nutrition post the surgery. And so they can't endure the surgeries to remove the fibrotic tissue, which is causing them the pain.
And do you feel like that some of it too is there has to be a willingness for progress to be slow? Because these weight loss surgeries or even like something like a GLP-1 can be abused to the point because we want something fast. Or there are people who are seeking out surgeons to just want it all done. So just do me from the waist down. And it's, whoa, hold up. You have got to prioritize your body as a whole structure, as a whole piece. And if you just go whack-a-mole with all of these treatments and you're not getting, like you say, really good input from professionals, medical professionals who will tell you, hey, this might take you going at it at this route. It might take longer, but you're going to end up so much better in such a healthier space than if you try to go do a quick something here. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting, too, that weight loss surgery is pitched so frequently when GLP-1s are so readily available. I think it's because I think there's incentives. I think there's a value for the doctor. healthcare is jacked that yeah. And I'm not trying to be, and again, I don't want to villainize anyone who's had that surgery and had great results from it and maybe even gone on to have lipedema surgery and have great results. I just have seen a lot of horror stories and I have personal experiences in my life where people I love very much died because of weight loss surgery. And now I know why. Mm-hmm. And that's a hard thing to grapple with. And I obviously am going to be incredibly biased. I'm going to be incredibly biased.
Yeah.
And I will admit my biases.
And I think it's just so important to have these conversations because I've had a weight loss surgery and I had it before I had my lipedema diagnosis. And now I can look back and it's just all so, it makes a lot of sense. But I was at a point where I, just like everyone, I have done all the diets and I was 40 pounds in 40 days and all the things, my legs and even my arms really were not responding to anything. My BMI was a 30, I think, and I went and talked to a weight loss doctor. I was just at that point where we get to where we're like, why nothing working before we know?
And you'll so do I went anything. And that's a reality.
And and he said, I think you should have this procedure. It's minimally invasive, an endoscopic procedure. And it's a type of a weight loss surgery where they suture off a part of your stomach. And we recommend it for people with your BMI. And you'll get down to a goal weight, which, of course, my goal weight was like my high school weight. This made no sense, but this is just what I'm thinking. Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And he's, yep, you're going to be at that weight in 6 months. Like this, I've only had like great success with this. So I get the surgery and I lost, I don't know, 20, maybe 30 pounds over the course of a year. But it was nowhere near what the goal was. And my BMI, honestly, I think is the same. It may be more. And my legs didn't respond at all. So it was very frustrating. So it was just another one of those things that I did where I'm like, why is my body like not, my body doesn't respond to any of this.
Yeah.
Like, and then I do the ultimate and it still doesn't work. And so then it's just like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah. And see
that you feel like the failure.
Yes. I think that's the bigger point here. It's not about pinpointing like weight loss surgery in particular. What we're really saying here is that the fact that there is so little awareness in the medical field, in the insurance company business world about lipedema, it is pushing women to these absolute desperate lengths that only end them up in worse off situations. Mm-hmm. And so you have 11% of the female population on earth reaching in desperation for something to help them because they know something is wrong. And because we don't have that understanding yet, it's a really scary place. And it does. It causes women to go to these lengths that might help in a moment, but ultimately it puts them at a worse off space in their health. And that's the goal. It's to be healthy. Our goal, everybody, in case you're listening, it's not so that we can all be skinny. It's we want to feel good. We want to be able to move throughout our life without feeling like we're trudging through mud. And we want to be able to do it in as healthy a way as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to reiterate, if you've had weight loss surgery, if that's something you did, if that's something you're thinking about now, I am not the person to listen to on whether that's the right decision for you. But I would say, if you don't love your doctor, if you don't trust them, if you don't know that they have your best interest at heart, I would 100% seek a second opinion.
Yeah.
Only because it is a big surgery and it is downplayed constantly, again, in social media, people telling like the glamour side of it, it is a decision to make. And I would say the exact same thing about lipedema surgery.
Yeah.
I think that we downplay the importance of the decision-making process. And it really should be something that you feel 100% on.
Yeah.
And if you are not confident in your doctor, please do not listen to them. I know that sounds terrible, but like I have listened to many doctors that I have felt uncomfortable with and had terrible results. So you have to trust the person that is helping you make these decisions. And if you don't, you're just like, it's just not going to pay off for you in the way that you think it is.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sorry, I got spicy. I just feel like it's such a thing that's pushed.
Yeah.
And really only in the last couple of years have people said, wait, maybe it's not the ideal solution for this problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a few minutes left. So John, do you have anything?
Nope.
Okay. Listen, because I could
keep talking about it, but yeah.
Yeah.
This has been like such a great discussion, like just to have a place to talk about this. I think if I would caveat anything like extra for anyone that's listening, especially someone who is a later stage patient or thinks they might be a later stage patient, it is hard out here on these streets, to be really honest. And most people will think that you are insane. And I think that is a really hard thing to have to say, but it's the truth. Every day I have people tell me that the reason I got this size is because I constantly eat. Right, that I'm constantly doing these things. And I fervently believe, and I think that most medical professionals in this space, I would assume every doctor that we see collectively here would agree with this because they seem pretty in tune with the movement, is that lipedema is a bucket right now. And there is likely variations of this disease within that bucket, which is really common when something gets studied in the beginning, right? Like how autoimmune illness used to be like autoimmune disease. Right. And now there's lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and all of these other things that kind of come out of that. As a later stage patient, you might feel like this weight doesn't make sense. And I want to give you the grace and say, it doesn't make sense. And the reason is because you have a condition. And that doesn't mean that every food choice you make is magical. It doesn't mean that every single day you're exercising, but the reality is there's a very big difference between someone who is extremely overweight and has chosen to not be active, is bedridden, and who on the typical like my 600 pound life. And I don't want to villainize those people either, because I think there is a different emotional struggle there, but that is a different type of weight. Someone who is actively mobile is living a normal life, but increasing in size. The caloric intake you would have to maintain and the lack of movement you would have to do to gain that weight, it just doesn't add up. Every doctor I saw said it doesn't add up. And I think if your doctor isn't listening to that, then maybe it's time to find somebody new, because I just feel like there's this like huge villainization of people in bigger bodies. And mm-hmm. I have seen too many women who are active and lovely and doing a lot. Some women, I met a woman who was like a farmer. And I'm like, this woman is doing farm chores every day. There's no way this woman is like sitting around eating. She's got to take care of her farm. The hardest thing that I faced as a public figure is that people don't believe I live the life I actually live. And that is a very weird experience. Mm-hmm. For every time I do something, there is a bevy of people who think that I've just done it for camera. And the wildest thing is like before social media, before all of this is who I was.
Yeah.
I did not become a new person for the internet. If anything, my health journey was about getting back to who I was by relieving some of that pain and honestly, some of the weight, mm-hmm. because it does affect mobility. I'm not going to sit here and say I didn't want to lose some of the weight, but then, you know, it's very fascinating to see that people would rather believe that I am orchestrating an insanely complex and difficult series of filming ops than the fact that I actually walked a mile or ran a race. Hmm. That they would rather believe that I have enough money, time, and desire to architect this entire wonderland than the actual truth of that I just did it.
Yeah.
And I don't know where they think I have that much money. Like, bless. Thank you for thinking I'm so successful. But your girl does not have that cash. I wish.
Yeah. People forget, like, just because it's on camera, it does not mean that it's glamorous on the other side or it's a wild thing. And I love that you're putting a voice to it. I think that what we're going to have to do is plan on an episode 2. If you are willing. We would love to have you back and just talk about, there's a lot there.
I think that we should do it after I've had my stomach surgery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I can see how things move.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a really interesting, and I think I mentioned this briefly, and I know we have to get off because we're running out of time, but some people stop because the surgeries get too hard. Yeah. And I often wonder, and I think I'll be a really good example of this, is if you can't do it halfway.
Yeah.
You either have to do them all or do them none. I will not know for sure until this last surgery.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious to see and even tell people what that's like.
Yeah. Great point.
Yeah. We're excited to keep watching your journey. And Anna, tell our listeners where they can find you and where they can listen to your podcast.
Yeah. So you can find me at Glitter and Lasers, not Glazers. And you can listen to my podcast anywhere that podcasts are available, Spotify, Apple, and it's called The Medical Detectives.
Awesome. Yeah. Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
See you, ladies. It was fun.
Thank you for listening today. If you've been enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star review and comment. And be sure to follow Lymphedema Mamas Podcast on Instagram. We love connecting with you guys.
As always, please remember the opinions expressed in our podcast are not necessarily those of medical professionals, and we recommend you consult with your own doctor regarding your health.
We hope you'll join us next time on the Lymphedema Mamas Podcast.